ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 13 The Hamsa Avatar answers questions. Text number 7.
Venu Sankarsha Jovanir.
Venu Sankarsha
Jovanir.
Venu Sankarsha Jovanir.
Dagtva Shamyandita Dvanam. Dagtva Shamyandita Dvanam. Evam guna vyatyayajo.
Evam guna vyatyayajo.
Evam guna vyatyayajo. Deham shamyadita kriyaha.
Deham shamyadita kriyaha.
Deha shamyadita kriyaha.
Deha shamyadita kriyaha.
Venu sankarsha jovanya.
Venu sankarsha jovanya.
Dagtva shamyandita dvanam.
Dagtva shamyandita dvanam.
Evam guna vyatyayajo.
Evam guna vyatyayajo.
Deha shamyandita kriyaha.
Deha shamyandita kriyaha.
Venu sankarsha jovanya.
Venu sankarsha jovanya.
Dagtva shamyandita dvanam.
Dagtva shamyandita dvanam.
Evam guna vyatyayojo.
Evam guna vyatyayojo.
Deha shamyandita kriya.
Deha shamyandita kriya.
Venu sankarsha jovanya.
Venu sankarsha jovanya.
Dagtva shamyandita dvanam.
Dagtva shamyandita dvanam.
Evam guna vyatyayajo.
Evam guna vyatyayajo.
Deha shamyandita kriya.
Deha shamyandita.
Venu
of bamboo,
Sankarsaja,
generated by the friction,
Vahni,
fire,
Dagtva,
having burned,
Shamyadi,
is pacified,
Tat of bamboo, Vanam,
the forest,
Evam,
thus.
Guna,
of the modes of nature.
Vyatyaya jaha,
generated by interaction.
Deha,
the material body.
Shamyati,
is pacified.
Tat,
as the fire.
Kriyaha,
performing the same action.
Translation. In a bamboo forest, the wind sometimes rubs the bamboo stacks together, and such friction generates a blazing fire that consumes the very source of its birth, the bamboo forest. Thus, the fire is automatically calmed by its own action. Similarly, by the competition and interaction of the material modes of nature, the subtle and gross material bodies are generated. If one uses his mind and body to cultivate knowledge, then such enlightenment destroys the influence of the modes of nature that generated one's body. Thus, like the fire, the body and mind are pacified by their own actions in destroying the source of their birth.
Okay. The translation we can read responsively.
In a bamboo forest, the wind sometimes rubs the bamboo stalks.
Together.
And such friction generates
a blazing fire
that consumes the very source of its birth,
the bamboo forest.
The bamboo forest.
Thus the fire is automatically calmed by its own action. Similarly, by the competition and interaction of the material modes of nature, the subtle and gross material bodies are generated. If one uses his mind and body to cultivate knowledge, then such enlightenment destroys the influence of the modes of nature that generated one's body. Thus, like the fire, the body and mind are pacified by their own actions. In destroying the source of their birth.
The purport by servants of Prabhupada. The word guna vyatya ja is significant in this verse. Vyatya indicates change or inversion in the normal order of things. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has described the concept of vyatya by giving the Sanskrit synonym vaishamya, which indicates inequality or disproportionate diversity. Thus it is understood by the term guna vyatya ja that the body is generated by the unstable relationship of the three modes of material nature, which exist everywhere in constantly changing proportions. There is constant strife among the modes of nature. A good person is sometimes torn by passion, and a passionate person sometimes wants to give up everything and rest. An ignorant person may sometimes become disgusted with his depraved life, and a passionate person may sometimes indulge in bad habits in the mode of ignorance. Due to the interactive conflict of the modes of nature, one wanders throughout material nature, creating one body after another by one's own work karma. As it is said, variety is the mother of enjoyment, and the variety of material modes gives hope to the conditioned souls that by changing their material situation, their unhappiness and frustration can be turned into happiness and satisfaction. But even if one acquires relative material happiness, that will soon be disturbed by the inevitable flux of the material modes.
Om Ajnanatibhrantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padagamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanyutam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanyutamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpade Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostude Tapta Kanjana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanasude Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. So this verse, 11th canto, many verses are very technical. As it is said, the 11th canto, there is nothing new from Srimad Bhagavatam. That which is covered in the first 10 cantos is pretty much summarized in the
11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that too, we are in the mid of the 11th canto. So we have finished the first volume of the book, so we are all starting with the second volume of 11th canto. And in this conversation between Sri Krishna and who else? Uddhava. So this conversation is going on for a few chapters. Now it is coming to next section, and in which is the questions answered by the Hamsavata, incarnation of the Lord. And here, so far we found, it was the whole discussion was going on regarding the three modes of material nature. And till yesterday, it was specified, it was mentioned, why it is important and how to come to the mode of goodness. So there are three material modes: Rajo Guna, Tamo Guna and Sattva Guna. That is the mode of ignorance, passion and goodness. So what do we have to do, and what is the significance to come to the mode of goodness? So till yesterday the topic, the discussion went till there. And today it is coming to the next point. That is, it is not enough to be in the mode of goodness, but one has to actually transcend even the mode of goodness. One has to transcend all the three material modes. It's a very interesting point. One time, Srila Prabhupada was asked this question. There are these three material modes, the mode of ignorance, passion and goodness. So, the devotees, how do they act? Because the devotees are supposed to be above the mode of goodness. They are supposed to be above sattva-gun. Means they are in shuddha sattva. So, whether the actions of the devotees are always placed in shuddha sattva? So, it is mentioned, this question was asked by His Grace Burijan Prabhu, and it's mentioned in my Glorious Master. So, he asked this question to Srila Prabhupada. So, how does a devotee act? So, Srila Prabhupada said, devotees usually act in the mode of goodness. They themselves are placed in the mode of goodness. You know, we can see devotees, we take bath, we wear fresh, nice clothes, and we wear fresh tilaks, we come to temple, we get up in the early morning. So the whole actions are driven to come to the mode of goodness. But the activities in Krishna consciousness, the transcendental activities, the 64 angas of bhakti, as we can see in Nectar Devotion, this is going on now, and we are doing now, discussing Bhagavatam, the deity worship, etc. These 64 angas of bhakti, it is actually above the mode of goodness. It is situated in the spiritual platform, in the Shuddha Sattva Vasudeva platform. Now today we will discuss a little bit, what is this modes of material nature? As many of you may know, the three modes of material nature, it is the primary building blocks of this world. If we consider this material world, which we can experience, which we can see, the primary building blocks are these three modes, the mode of passion, ignorance and goodness. It is like if we ask, where is the mode of goodness? You know, if I see this microphone, where is the mode of goodness or passion or ignorance? We may not be able to see directly. We cannot see with my eyes what is the constitution of these three, what is the combination of these three. We may not be able to see. However, we can just give an example. For instance, if you take any particle, any matter, we can say the primary ingredient, what is it made of? Materially speaking, we can say electron, proton, neutron, you can see all these subatomic particles. It is common if you take water, it is common if you take a wood, it is common if it is take a metal or if you take some organic or inorganic matter. It is common with respect to whatever, because these subatomic particles are much subtler than the gross matter. It's not as subtle as the mind, however. Still, it is subtle compared to the gross matter which we can experience. So, the constituent in nature can be different, ultimately, from the combination looks quite different from its original constituent. So, in the same way, these three modes of nature, even though it is the primary building blocks, we may not be able to see through our eyes straight away. However, we can see in Bhagavad Gita, there are so many indications given how we can actually experience, how we can see different natures. By the habit of eating, by the habit of speaking, what kind of activities they do, what kind of worship they do, we can actually differentiate between different modes of material nature. One striking example, a simple example, those who do not know actually the modes of nature or hearing it for the first time, it is, consider the primary colors, the primary light, you know, red, green, blue, whatever, the primary colors, whichever, doesn't matter. So if you consider the primary colors, and if you take a computer monitor, you have the nice resolution, you can set different resolution, and at one setting you can see true color, you know, it's a million color or something, it's the highest resolution maybe we can get. So even with the combination of these three colors, the three light shades, we can actually get a million another shades. Is it right? A million another shades. And that can create such a graphic representation of this world. It can create so many pictures. It can create so many movies. And people are captivated by such wonderful presentation. So even though we consider this only there are three primary colors, it can create such variety and variegatedness. In the same way, these three modes of material nature, it can create the diversified material universe. And just by seeing this diversified material universe, we won't see these three modes unless and until we are trained in the process of seeing it. It is hard otherwise. So if you see our own body, it is also the combination of the three elements. If you see the people are attracted to the opposite sex, even if you see their body, that is also combination of these primary modes. We are attached to our nice iPod, maybe iMate, maybe iPhone or MacBook. You know, we have, you know, our own collection, our own paraphernalia. But ultimately, these things are also made of basically these three modes of material nature. The primary constituent, if you analyze, it is just matter and it is only three things, but a different combination. And that makes us very much attracted. And our heart is completely captivated. If I lose my iMate, I will become, you know, where is it? You know, I will be searching. It's like, you know, in the ultimate sense, you know, the great devotees, they are searching for Krishna. And we are searching for, if we lose something, our gadgets, we will be searching, you know, passionately. We will be with a lot of heart in it. We will be looking for that. But ultimately, it is just a combination of three elements. As it is said, you know, Pruvas, you know, quotes from Bhagavatam, he says, Yasyatma Bhukti, Gunape Tridhatuke. He says, you know, whatever you are seeing, it is Tridhatu, the three elements, ultimately. Now, not only that, even the subtle entities, the subtle feelings, the feelings of our mind, even though it is subtler than the gross body, the mind is subtler than, definitely, the mind and the intelligence is quite subtle compared to our gross body. But even that is also made of these primary elements. And at some times we want to control things. We want to be the center. We have false ego. You know, even if we buy the most expensive house, for instance, for example, even if we buy the most expensive house and a car, if nobody is visiting, if nobody is there to appreciate, if nobody is giving us that feeling that, you know, I am the owner, then there is no fun. Nobody is around, then there is no fun. It's like we can buy a nice car, then we had to take a photograph and send it to a few relatives if they are far away, so that we get some sort of satisfaction, because our false ego is the ownership, the propensity of ownership is satisfied. So even that subtle feeling, that is also constituted by these three elements. So even the both gross and the subtle, everything is coming ultimately from these three elements. Srila Prabhupada, one day, he was a visitor. He was so much passionate about music. And he was completely captivated by sitar. You may know what is a sitar. You know, it's a stringed instrument. So many sounds, nice sound come. And this devotee told Prabhupada, look, I am so attached to it. I want to learn sitar. So he said, you know, I have to spend few decades. Because he's so attached. Means he is influenced by a particular mode of the nature.
is influenced by the mode of passion, ultimately to learn, to get. So he told Prabhupada, yes, yes, I am going to spend a few years in it. Srila Prabhupada said, this kind of attachment, if it is for Sita, it's not even one lifetime is not enough. He said, one needs lifetimes. Especially for Sita, lifetimes. So that's how, when we are placed in a particular mode, one is ready to even give not only decades and ultimately lifetimes. So Prabhupada was mentioning about a particular musician, he mentioned, he actually spent lifetimes in learning Sita. And we see there is a group of scientists. Even scientists are also intrigued by the matter. How can they spend year after year, decade after decade, to understand the matter, to analyze the matter? As I have seen one person, he was, you know, first time I met him, he was telling, he spent last 5 years in studying the, you know, spin in the sodium 2- ion. But he was 5 years. Shocked. 5 years in sodium 2- ion. Don't ask me what it is, but we are spending like that. How can they get so much attached? Because the matter, if you analyze the matter, it is so difficult to understand. If you try to understand the combination of three modes, it is very intriguing. It's very difficult to understand. So they spend life after life sometimes. Another story was about Chandrasekhar. I was reading his biography. So he spent around 40 or 50 years, the whole life, researching. And what he would do, he would take some problems in astrophysics. He would spend 10 years in one problem. And after that, he will move to next problem. He will spend another 10 years. Like that, he spent on 5 problems and his life was finished. And as a result of that, since he did so much of hard work, after his death, after 25 years after death, he got Nobel Prize. So, you know, it's not that he was rewarded, but we don't know in which species he came back. We don't know. But it's the 50 years he got after 25 years. So, this is the material nature. It is very intriguing, and even the scientists are captivated and ready to spend their life in it. Now, of course, in this verse is not telling about how we can be attached to the three modes of material nature. But it is talking about how to get out of it. So the whole idea is how to get out of it. And very wonderful analogy is given here. That is a bamboo forest. In a bamboo forest, there are so many bamboo stacks. And when they rub together, due to friction, fire is generated. And the same fire can actually annihilate. It can consume the bamboo forest. So this analogy is very interesting. And when we apply this analogy to the devotional life, it becomes very significant, as mentioned in this verse. And here, a very important point is given, even the material body, it's actually created by the interaction of the material modes. It's the interaction. Bhagavad Gita says, Karanam gunasangosya sat asat yoni janmasu. That is ultimate reason for this body to generate, which includes the body as well as the mind. The reason is karanam gunasanga, the association with the material nature. Because by nature we are spirit soul. We are not the three material elements. We are the spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. However, when we come in contact with these three modes, that is the basic source of generation of this body as well as the mind. Now, one may ask, is that all? Just association with the material modes? There is something more, isn't it? And what is that something more, other than these modes of nature, for this body, which is actually even more primary than the modes of material nature? Can anyone guess? What is primary to these three modes of material nature, by which we are actually got this body? Even though Bhagavad Gita says karanam gunasangasya, that is a fact, but Prabhupada explains in the same purport, there is something, you know, more significant than that. Due to that, actually we came in association of the three modes of material nature. What is that? Exactly, the desire. So it's actually explained in the two verses later, in the same context, that is, it is the desire. It's not that, you know, we were somewhere and suddenly these three modes came and attacked us. You know, it's like a monster. Oh, three modes are coming and attacking you. No. We had the desire, and so Krishna made the nice arrangement so that we are in nice association of the three modes of material nature in so many different ways. And when we are conditioned, even in our previous life or, you know, before becoming a devotee, all these things makes us hard to practice devotion service. As it's a very nice example. Sridhar Swami is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. So Sridhar Swami, he preached quite a lot in India. He was in India for some time as well. So he exactly knows the Western culture as well as a very good understanding of Indian culture also. So he made a point. For Westerners, the difficulty for Westerners in becoming devotee is pap. And for Indians, in becoming a devotee, the difficulty is pap. The pap means it's the sinful action, you know, a lot of sinful activities they are performing. So it becomes conditioning and it becomes so difficult to become a devotee. As for Indians, it is more family attachment. You know, we said, oh, you know, mother said this, father said this, you know, all those kind of things comes in. If you chant and if you take few photographs in the devotional cloth, send home, few people will come here flying to see what's going on here. You know, so it is bap. So that's the two analogy he gave. So in all the circumstances, the affect, the attachment or the influence of the modes of material nature, it is carrying forward. We are going through. Now also, after becoming devotees also, after chanting Hare Krishna also, we are influenced so much by the material modes. So much. That is the reason we are encouraged. In the previous verses, everyone is encouraged, first come to the mode of goodness. Get up early morning, chant Hare Krishna, don't sleep in, you know, take only prasad. You know, so many instructions are given, and study the scriptures which are not only in the mode of goodness, beyond the mode of goodness, like Srimad Bhagavatam. So that from ignorance and passion which we were in or which we are in, come to goodness. And now we have to see how to come to the mode of pure goodness or Shuddha Sattva. And we can never say we are always in a particular mode. That is another very interesting point. That is, we cannot say, oh, I am 100% in goodness or 100% in passion or 100% in ignorance. It's not possible. The modes are always mixing and there is always a competition between the modes. Sometimes mode is goodness is winning, sometimes passion, sometimes ignorance. So the competition is going on. So one verse in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says there is always competition going on and one mode is always winning. Always winning. And Prabhupada says in the same verse purport, I'll read. Prabhupada says this competition is always going on. Therefore, one who is actually intent on advancing in Krishna consciousness has to transcend these three modes. The solution is no, you cannot balance this. So, okay, there are three modes, okay, we will try to balance it out. Said, no, it's not possible. But one has to transcend these three modes. That is the message given by Prabhupada. And he says, although these three modes of material nature, if one is determined, he can be blessed by the mode of goodness. And by transcending the mode of goodness, he can be situated in pure goodness, which is called the Vasudev state, a state in which one can understand the science of God. So it is said, Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. That is the Sattvam Vishuddham, the Vishuddha Sattva, or the pure goodness, it is also known as Vasudev, in which actually one can understand the science of God. Now, we take an example, a pastime from Srimad Bhagavatam, to actually see the pure mode of goodness. This example is very interesting. Because externally, by the body of this devotee, or by the actions, or sometimes the words of this devotee, it doesn't look like that devotee was in pure goodness, or a devotee who was in complete purity. We cannot see that. However, the reality is like that. So that example is the pastime of Vritrasura from the 6th canto of Bhagavatam. So, as you may know, Vritrasura in his previous birth was Maharaj Chitraketu. Chitraketu was cursed by Mother Parvati because while he was traveling on his aeroplane, he just laughed at Lord Shiva, where Mother Parvati was sitting on his lap. So he didn't mean anything, but he just laughed. And Mother Parvati cursed him to be a demon in the next birth. So this is a very dangerous situation. The curse is so effective. And sure enough, in the next birth, Maharaj Chitraketu, who was a great devotee, he became Vritrasur. And it is, when we talk about devotees, okay, when we talk about devotees, they are usually pleasant. Their bodily features are very pleasant, appealing to everyone. When we talk about the Supreme Lord, we talk about his lotus-like eyes. And similarly, when we talk about devotees also, they also have very beautiful features. But when Vritrasura was born, his bodily features, it was really horrendous. It was said, his eyes was like, it was piercing, just like the midday sun. It's like no one can actually look at his eyes, because it was so piercing. It was so heavy. He had a gigantic body, blackish, and he had copper-like hair and mustache and beard. So the bodily features, it doesn't actually appear, it seems to be he's a devotee or a great soul. It looks like exactly like a demon. And what he had a trident in his hand. Any devotees usually carry a trident? Exception maybe Mother Durga or Lord Shiva, they may carry, but we don't carry any trident in our hands. But Vritrasura, even though being such an elevated devotee, he was carrying trident. And what was he doing? He was jumping and dancing and shouting. And when he was dancing, it was like an earthquake. And everyone ran away in all different directions. So this is an activity of a devotee who is actually in pure goodness. But his external activity, it doesn't look like. And after he was born, all the demigods got frightened, and the primary aim of Vritrasura was to kill all the demigods, including Indra, who is a chief. Why? If you look at flashback, Indra killed Vritrasura's brother. Who was that? Vishwaroop. If you think about Indra doesn't have a very good record in Bhagavatam. Indra's story is a criminal, it's a quite criminal record. You know, if you go to a police station, if you tell your name, maybe they will search and have a look. Okay, page 1, 2, 3. This record, everything is not so very pleasant. Canto after canto, if you go, even up to 10 canto, we can see the record of Indra is not so nice. So in this case, what Indra did, when he offended Brihaspati, his guru, so that itself is an offense. He offended his own guru. That's okay. And Brihaspati left. And due to that, he started losing all his kingdom, all his opulence. Then he wanted a priest who can perform yajna for him. So Indra got this very nice priest who was Vishwaroop. Vishwaroop was a pure Brahmin, very great saintly person, and he appointed Vishwaroop as his chief priest, and he was performing yajna for Indra. But Vishwaroop was half demon by birth. So he had something in his heart for the demon. So along with when he was performing sacrifice for the demigods, he was giving some oblation for the demons also. The moment Indra found out that Vishwaroop was doing this, he cut his head off. That's it. Finished. Killed. So actually Indra killed his own spiritual master. Vritrasura later complains, you are such a person that you killed your own spiritual master. Why? Because you want to live in the heaven. It's like, if something comes in our sense gratification, in our way to sense gratification, we become very angry. People may be very peaceful, very kind, giving blessings, but if something wrong happens in the sense gratification, then the whole agitation comes. In the same way, Indra immediately he killed him. And this made Vritrasura very, very angry, and he wanted to kill all the demigods. And he was chastising and he was cursing and he was shouting at all the devatas. So I will just go through a few of his states. And in this chapter, we can actually see the activities of Vritrasur and his glories. It's actually, we can see in the three levels, three different sections. On one level, he is actually preaching dharma, the proper religious principles. And on other side, he is actually showing the tendencies, actions and words of a demon. And on the higher level, he is actually showing an example of an exalted devotee. He is showing the definition of pure devotion service, and he actually summarizes, he finally gives some, a few prayers which are like the epitome of pure devotion service. The four verses in that chapter, the last four verses before Vritrasur dies, these four verses are actually the sum and substance of pure devotional service. So we can see how Vritrasur, even though he was in such a torturous, terrible condition, he was showing and demonstrating pure devotional service, which is beyond the modes of material nature. Now, in the battlefield, when Vritrasur and his team was attacking the demigods, the demons, they started running behind. They were quite afraid because the arrows and the weapons of demigods were very powerful. So immediately, you know, whoever is covered, what they do? Just run after. You know, this is India and Pakistan is fighting. If some coward is in the army, what they do? Some sound comes, they will run behind. You know, not necessary it is, you know, it's the bullet shots, maybe some Diwali crackers. But when the sound comes, they are completely afraid. In the same way, the demons immediately started running back. So, and the demigods, what they did? They took the opportunity and they started killing who were running back. So, Vritrasur, on the primary religious principle, he instructed, he chastised and criticized both the demons and the demigods. He said, these demons, you are, first of all, you are useless. They said, you have actually come, you are just like stool. That was the word used by Vritrasur. You are like just useless product of your mother. Just useless. You are running in a battlefield. And you demigods, you are saying you are great heroes and you are upholders of religious principle, but you are killing people who are running back, who are actually running away, you are killing. So both of you, both these demigods as well as the demons, both are just useless. Because they are not even following the primary religious principle one has to observe in a battle. So he actually, initially he gave this basic dharma. Then he actually said a few words which are very interesting, because it doesn't suit a devotee at all. If you look at a devotee, will a devotee say like this? If you see this verse, it's very, very interesting. He says, "O most abominable one, when I pierce your stone-like heart with my trident, I shall be freed from my debt to my brother." This is Vritrasura telling Indra. So it's actually like taking revenge. He's telling, okay, I want to just kill you. I want to take revenge of my brother. You killed my brother and that's it. I don't want to know anything. And he's telling to the other demigods, "You are naturally cruel. If other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking me with raised weapons, I sever their heads with a sharp trident. With those heads, I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava and other leaders of the ghost along with their herds." So it is telling, he will do sacrifice to Bhairava and the leaders of the ghost. He's not telling, you know, I will do some, you know, sacrifice for Vishnu, or I will do Sankirtan, or nothing like that. He's telling, I will sacrifice, I will kill you and I will offer you to Bhairava and the leaders of the ghost. So in one level, the words of Vritrasura, it looks like, you know, completely out of order for a devotee. It's completely out. Now, Vritrasura actually concludes. He comes to a higher level. He explains the points in a much higher sense. He says, "O Indra, initially you tried to kill me with a club. Then the club came to Vritrasura. What he did? He just caught off the club and he threw it back and hit the elephant of Indra, that is Airavat, and Airavat flew 14 yards away. So Vritrasa said, Indra, don't worry. This time don't worry. Club is gone, that's okay, but you have something more in your hand. That is Vajra. You have the thunderbolt. And that Vajra is made by the bone of Dadhiji. That is also, Vritrasa knows that also. He said, you use that, and at this time, don't worry, you use that to kill me. And you have the blessing of Lord Vishnu. So if you use that, definitely I will be killed. So please attack me. Please kill me. So he actually changed. He said, so far he was trying to kill and he was telling all these big, big words. But Vritrasa, since he is a transcendental person, since he understood why this fight is going on and what's the reason behind it, he said, okay, now you kill me. You apply. And he said, don't worry about the club. Club didn't work, but this is what happened to Vajra. So, I am ready. And he said, be a hero, come straight in front of me and use the Vajra. Don't run away, you know, don't go to a corner and just throw and run. No, don't come in front of me and attack me. So Vritrasa was very strong and he was ready. And then he mentions a very striking point. He mentions that, look, if you kill me, there is a benefit. He says, Manasvinam Pada Raja Prabhasye. Vritrasa says, Manasvinam means great devotees like Narada Muni, who are great souls. If you kill me, ultimately I will obtain the dust of lotus feet of such great devotees as Narada Muni, and by which I can go back home, back to the abode of the Lord Krishna. So I don't have to live in this world. But whereas Indra, you killed so many people. You killed including your own spiritual master. If you see, both Vritrasur and Indra, both are devotees. We cannot say Indra is not a devotee and Vritrasur is only a devotee. That's not right. Both Vritrasur and Indra, both of them are devotees. However, Indra used Krishna. He approached the Supreme Lord. Why? Because he wanted to live in the heaven. That's all. Whereas Vritrasur, he didn't want to live in the heaven. In the later prayers, he confirmed that point. He doesn't want to live in the heaven. Rather, he wants to serve Krishna. So, Krishna, as I said, E yathamam prabhadyante, tam tathaiva bhajamyaham. So, however you approach Krishna, in the same way Krishna reciprocates. So, Indra's reciprocation was to rot in the material world. Even though he was happy, yes, I can win the battle, I can kill him and I can live in this world. But, ultimately, what is the thing? He wants to rot in the material world. Whereas for Vritrasur, it is going back home, back to Godhead, because he knew the final, the transcendental plan of Krishna. Because after death, when he is killed by Indra, he will be going back home. So he was very happy. So it is said, anyway in this battle, victory is for Vritrasur. Whatever happens, the victory is for Vritrasur, because ultimately he is going to finish the business. He is not going to stay in this world. He is going to the abode of Krishna. So victory is guaranteed for him. So he was completely fearless. And finally he makes four prayers, four verses before he was being killed by Indra. It's actually not killed by Indra. Indra couldn't actually kill him, if you see. He actually, by his bhakti, he could actually leave this world by himself. And in that trance, just Indra cut off his body. So literally speaking, he couldn't actually kill. Though apparently it looks like Indra could kill such a great devotee. So in the final prayers, Vritrasa makes very interesting point. And first prayer he says, I just want to become the servant of your servant. He makes this prayer to the Supreme Lord. He actually cries. The Vritrasa cries. And he earnestly cry out to the Supreme Lord. He says, Aham Haretava Padeika Mula Dasanu Daso Bhavitasmi Bhuya. That is, you please accept me as servant of your servant. Just make me Dasanu Das. So Prabhupada explains, ultimately one has to take shelter of a spiritual master and act in a way that one is servant of the spiritual master. That is the real meaning of Dasanu Das. So Prabhupada mentions, this is the real philosophy Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given. That is becoming the servant of the servant. So acting in a way that our master gets satisfaction, our master gets pleased, he gets pleasure. So here Vritrasura, he mentions, Aham Hare Tava. Hare is addressing the Supreme Lord. Tava Dasana Daso Bhavitasmi Bhuya, all the time. Then Manas Mareta Asupater Gunamste Grinita Vakarma Karot Kaya. So he says, I want to just think about the transcendental qualities, the transcendental attribute of you who is the Lord of my heart, the Lord of my soul, the Lord of my life. That is Asupate. So he is addressing the Supreme Lord earnestly as Asupati, meaning you are the Lord of my life. So we see the whole change in the dialogues of Vritrasura. He's saying, oh Lord, you are my the soul of my soul. And I just want to think about your transcendental qualities. And Grihita va karma karotu kaya. That is, just my words be the glorification of you and my actions be service unto your lotus feet, O Lord. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport of this verse, he says, this verse is the sum and substance of devotional service. That is engaging both all mind, body and words in service of Krishna. That is the sum and substance of devotional life. So here we can see, even in this verse it is mentioned, even though the body and mind and words are the product of the three modes of material nature, to transcend these three modes, the process is using them in service of Krishna. So here it is mentioned to cultivate the knowledge, to cultivate the transcendental knowledge with the body and the mind, which the actual transcendental knowledge means surrender unto Krishna. Surrender unto Krishna and serving Krishna, that is the actual transcendental knowledge. So here Vritrasura is saying, let my body, words and mind be completely engaged in you. Then Vritrasura says, he makes it clear, he clarifies the difference between Indra, he is a devotee, and himself, he is also a devotee. The difference between a materially motivated devotee, who is Indra, and a pure devotee, such as Vritrasura. He says, I don't want any heavenly planet. Na naga prishtam, na parameshtyam. I don't want the highest abode of Lord Brahma. I don't want that. Na sarvabhaumam, na rasadhipatyam. Sarvabhaum means the sovereignty of all the three worlds. Not the sadhipatyam. That is, even the control of the Rasa planet, which is a lower planet system. And na yoga siddha apunadbhavamva. So that is very interesting. He says, I don't want any mystic perfection. And he says, apunadbhavamva. Apunadbhavam means the cycle of repeated birth and death. People perform devotional life, or people may perform different kind of austerities in the spiritual path, maybe through jnana or karma or whatever, ashtanga, in whichever process, ultimately to just get out of the cycle of repeated birth and death. But Vritrasura is saying, even I don't want that. Even I don't want to be saved from the cycle of birth and death. Even I don't want to be saved from samsara. He's not interested. And why he doesn't want any of this thing? He says, samanjasatva virahaya kankshe. Because all these things will cause separation from you. You cannot have two things together. You can either, you know, it's like a fire and water. You cannot light a small lamp and pour one bucket of water. You can pour that, then only water will be there. There will not be any fire. In the same way, there is no coexistence of these two things. So he says, I don't want viraha. I don't want separation from you. Rather, I just want to serve you. Then, after this, he gives four analogies. Vritrasura gives four analogies which are actually brings out the point of pure devotion service again. He says, these four analogies are very, very interesting, because we'll go through this. He says, Ajata Paksham Iva Mataram Gaga. He says first, my position is like Ajata Paksham, means consider a small bird. For this bird, the wings have not yet grown. And that bird's life is completely dependent on its mother. To eat, the bird cannot fly. The bird has complete dependence on the mother. Can't do anything independently. If mother feeds, the small baby bird can eat something. Otherwise, can't eat anything. So he says, my position at this point is just like that of that baby bird, whose wings are not yet grown. Ajata paksham iva mataram gaga stanyam yatha vatsaratha kshutartha. And next example he gives, it is just like that of a calf. A calf who is very hungry and mother is not nearby. What can that calf do? Can't do anything. It's again the complete dependence. Can't drink milk because mother is not there. We can go and buy a bottle of milk, but a calf cannot. Then he says, Priyam Priyeva Vishata Vishanna. That is just like a wife is separated from her husband for the fulfillment. Ultimately, she's longing for the association of her husband. In these three examples, Vritrasa says, in the same way, I am actually longing completely for you, O my Supreme Lord. So, I cannot bear the separation. Rather, I want to go to you as soon as possible. So that is the reason Vritrasa didn't have any problem. He was ready. He was telling you, oh Indra, you kill me. I am ready to be killed. Because I can't bear this separation from the Supreme Lord. And finally, he concludes his prayer before his death. And that prayer, I will just read out, because it actually, he mentions very wonderfully about the association of the devotees. The final prayer is, I just want to be associated with the devotees. He says, O my Lord, my Master, I am wandering throughout the material world as a result of my fruitive activities. I therefore simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. My attachment to my body, wife, children and home is continuing by the spell of your external energy. But I wish to be attached to them no longer. Let my mind, my consciousness and everything I have be attached only to you. So this is the real transcendental knowledge. And through this knowledge, as demonstrated by Vritrasura, one can actually go beyond the three modes of material nature. And that is the sum and substance of devotional service. I stop here and see if there are any comment or questions. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki.